It's the 12th of March. We've been here for 6 weeks. This is week number 7. Hard to believe, right? Hard to believe. Okay. I don't know if we will or not. This is sad because I missed that day. I apologize profusely because it really throws us into a tizzy. We may be ready at next. Normally, we would have exam number 2 on Thursday of next week, right before the break, which gives you a break. I don't want to. I can't have the exam the day we get back after, because you guys are going to go, I didn't study at all. And so we'll decide. We may do the exam online. Anybody into Canvas doing the exam online? Because part of it is just calculations. So, but then I don't know how many of you are able to scan stuff in and deal with stuff online. So we'll see. But we should, maybe we'll finish up chapter 5, introduction to stocks today, I'm not sure. But we're ready, excuse me, we're ready next week to get into the heart of the course and learn things that most people have no idea even exist. Not that it's going to make you the best stock pickers in the world, I hope it does, but it'll at least tilt the odds in your favor. All right, so you need your chapter 5 packets, because we're going to do calculations from them. So pull those out. We're going to do calcs today. Get your calculator out. Yeah, week after next is spring break. We have a week off. Ivana Vico. Well, yes, of course. Yes, it's back, please. How are we doing, folks? How are we doing, by the way? How are we doing? Not bad. Up almost 11%. You guys are awesome. But a lot of it just has to do with that gutsy call. And Boeing, you would have thought, Boeing has got, the last couple of days has just tanked, but you would have thought it'd be a whole lot worse. And a lot of people are looking at it like, don't worry, they're going to figure out what the hell's wrong, if there's anything wrong with the 737 MAX. So, we'll see what happens there. Senator Romney, okay, Romney trying to get an act. Trump's too stupid. He's too stupid to fly. No, they're too complex to fly. He says, far too complex to fly. What a dumb shit. Why did he keep his mouth shut? Anyway, any questions? Want to sell? Do you want to sell anything? No? Sell our winner? Sell our big winner? No, you guys want to hang on to your winners. Smart. Hang on to your winners. Those are what make you rich. Those are what make you very wealthy. Okay, so we had gotten to this point where we realized, that, the volatility is real. Yes, it's going to go up and down, but as long as we don't freak out and we take a long-term perspective, we're going to see that again, hopefully today, long-term perspective, the world is, the world ends. It doesn't matter where your money is. But who's got a good joke? Anybody? Kathleen's not here. You guys got to bring, she had worse jokes than me. Let's hear.
Got it.
No? Okay. I told you guys long ago about the alligator and the duck, probably. How about the termite? Did I tell you about the termite? This one you got to think. Did I tell you?
I think you did.
I did?
I'm not sure.
Okay. You got to think about this one. This termite walks into a bar, right? And he says, is the bartender here? Is the bartender here? He's a termite. Is the bartender here? Not the bartender, but the bartender. You have to think about that one. Okay, wait till 121 is really bad. It's the worst one. The worst one is today. And then we'll get away from the bar here. All right, so now we're going to take a look at some characteristics of stocks. And we discussed the stock split. The stock spin-off, and then the stock split, where these are accounting maneuvers. One is where we take the stock and the company and break it up into other parts. And the other one is where we just split the stocks. It's useless. Now, treasury stock. What a silly name, treasury stock. Well, you don't hear too much of the word treasury stock. What you hear are share buybacks or just buybacks. See, once the company has shares outstanding, the company itself can buy the shares back. But as soon as the company buys those shares back, those shares are out of circulation now. So we hear quite a bit about this. In fact, it's become a bit of a political football, in that companies received a tremendous boost from the tax changes, where they lowered the corporate taxes, and the idea was they were going to pass it on to their employees as employee raises. They're going to invest in more equipment and more technology and upgrading productivity, and nothing like that happened. What did they do? They turned around and bought their shares back. Hundreds of billions of dollars of shares they bought back. Now, why? Why? Now, you economics students, if you reduce the supply of something, and the demand doesn't change, but remember, it's always changing all the time. If you reduce the supply of something and the demand doesn't change, what happens to the price? It boosts the price. So the idea was, hey, we'll boost the price by buying back our shares. Now, in and of themselves, I don't think there. You hear people now becoming a political football, and some of the Democratic candidates saying, we should stop, we should not allow these buybacks. Buybacks in and of themselves are not evil. There's nothing wrong with them. But eventually, the fruits of our productivity have to be enjoyed by the vast majority of people, or you're going to start seeing people not saying tax the rich, they're going to say eat the rich. You're going to see bumper stickers that say guillotines, the French Revolution. So we'll see what happens. But I like it when companies buy back their shares when the price is low, not when the price is high. I want them to say, okay, you got some money and this price is low, buy back your shares now. But they tend to buy back their shares when the price is high to boost it even higher. Okay, some companies will have different classifications of stocks, Class A, Class B. Some of those classifications may pay better dividends. They may have stronger voting rights. At one point, GM had 7 different classes of stocks. I don't know why they needed 7 different classes of stocks. But the one we often look at the most is the Berkshire Hathaway. The Class A or the original shares. So let's take a look at that, like $330,000, something like that. Remember Mr. Buffett refused to split his shares. Come on, sweetheart. Come on, honey. Internet, yes, let's coax it. 30 years. The Internet is 30 years old today. Or the World Wide Web. I'm not the World Internet. So Burke A are the original shares, and they go for $300,000 a share. Because remember, Mr. Buffett never split his shares. Well, in the 1990s, the investment world, the Wall Street, the investment world went to Mr. Buffett and said, "Come on, give us something we can more easily trade." This is really hard. At the time, they were just selling, I think, for $40,000-$50,000. So they created Burke B. Burke B. And that's the second share. Now, see, $200 a share. That's a hell of a lot easier to buy shares when something's $300,000 versus $200. He actually, when they came out with the shares in the prospectus, he said, "I would not buy these shares. You should buy Class A shares. These shares are not as important as the Class A shares." And then he sort of changed his mind because these things eventually became much easier for him to use than the Class A shares when he used his stock to buy other companies. Sometimes they use cash, sometimes they use stock, sometimes they use a mixture of both. And so it's easier to use this stock to buy other shares of other companies. So that's why we have different classifications. You might have heard of the Class B, I think it's Facebook, Class B. They are held by the insiders, by Mr. Zuckerberg and his close group, and those have more power than the Class A shares. I'm not sure. Look it up, because I'm not sure if it's the other way around. But people were pretty up, and same thing is true with Snapchat. The one classification is held by the closely knit group of folks who started it, and they're more powerful than the other classification. So watch for that. It's not something you would normally have to worry about because most companies just have one classification. You might hear something about par value. It's pretty meaningless. It'll be the number that they put on a single share, which you don't even see anymore. It's all electronic. But more importantly is the book value. And I used to ask people to go find the book value. It's not hard to find. You have to go to statistics. But if you've taken Business 121, you know we calculate our net worth by taking the assets minus the equities. And you folks in accounting know that, assets minus equities. It's the same thing true. Book value. We'll take a look at book value. But that's not that important until it is. This is more important. We tend to think of the market value. So let's go back to Burke A or Burke B. No, let's use say McDonald's. Okay. What's the market price of McDonald's? $181. But if we go to key statistics on Yahoo, where is it? Where's the book value? Here it is. Huh? If you take all of McDonald's assets, subtract their liabilities, you wind up with a negative $8 in book value. What's going on here? Well, McDonald's really doesn't own that much, folks. They don't really own that much. They don't own most of the stores. They're owned by the franchisees. What does McDonald's do? They take burgers and potatoes. There's Josie. And they take Coca-Cola, and they sell it and make a ton of money. So if you were to take a McDonald's, sell off all their assets, pay off all their debts, you'd have to wind up with an extra $8 to pay off all the debts. So you see, does the market really care that McDonald's has a negative net worth? No, what they're interested in is the cash flow. What kind of cash flow? Let's take a look at another company that's more AT&T and Verizon. They have a closer. So AT&T is selling for $30. If we go to key statistics, which I was already on, I didn't have to do that. Where's their book value? $25. So you see, so they're selling for $30. AT&T, if you took all their assets, sold them, paid off their debts, you'd have $25 in your pocket. So that book value is a lot closer to the market value. Are you with me? What happens if the market value goes below the book value? What is the market saying? What are investors saying? Yeah, we're in trouble, right? We're in trouble. This doesn't look good. Because then if the market value goes below the book value, there's a real chance, and it happens, but not always, but when it does, it's big news, of some people, they're called corporate raiders, private equity investors, they go by various names, and they'll swoop in, buy 50% plus one share, which means they are now in the company, and they could liquidate the company, pay off all the assets, sell all the assets, pay off all the debts, and walk away with extra money in their pocket. You see what's going on here? It doesn't happen often, but it happens. And when it does, think about it. That company that's been in business for 60 years or 120 years or whatever, and you've worked for the last 22 years, is now out of business. So, are you happy about that? These jerks came in on their private jets, liquidated the company, put us all out of work? Would you be pissed off? Would you go to your elected representative and say, this is horrible, this is horrible, why are you letting these ghouls do this to us? And that's exactly what happened. And the politicians kind of hum and haw, but this is exactly what we want. Huh? You know, capitalism ain't perfect. But what the market was saying, and maybe it's right, maybe it's not, maybe there is value there. What investors are saying by bidding the price below the book value is they're saying, we don't think this company is worth its assets on the books. So capitalism would say, we need to plow this thing under. We need to release that capital and have it better. Sound like an advertisement, don't I? And have it better deployed in our economy. And this is why we have unemployment insurance. Don't let anybody tell you that we have unemployment insurance so that we can not pay people to work. I mean, that's not true. We want you to be unemployed, huh? We want you to go find a better job because you, as human capital, are being are not being employed effectively, efficiently. Does that make sense? And hopefully you'll get a better job, paying job. Now, here's what's happening, is people are going from $22 an hour to $11 an hour in Lordsburg, Ohio. Have you heard about that? They're closing the one plant. The Chevy Cruze. Have you ever seen a Chevy Cruze? It's a pretty cool car, you know, and it's competing against the Toyotas and the Hondas. But the problem is people are just buying a whole lot fewer small cars. So they're closing that plant. And, you know, these people who were getting $20 an hour are now getting $11 an hour. And so it's not a pretty sight. This is Joseph. Okay, questions, thoughts, ideas? Cool, makes sense? Are you getting an education? Okay, now, dividends. Do we like dividends? Oh, yeah, we love dividends. Dividends are money in our pocket. Now, in the United States and most countries that had something to do in the past with the United Kingdom, England, such as Canada, South Africa, Hong Kong, Australia, they pay quarterly. We pay quarterly. Other countries may pay semi-annually, every 6 months, or annually dividends. The boards of directors decide how much, if any, dividends should be paid. They're not under any obligation to pay these things, right, folks? They could stop tomorrow. They could say, we're going to cut our dividend tomorrow. We've been paying dividends for 100 years. But they could cut our dividends tomorrow. And we normally look at them as a percentage of earnings per share, which is the all-important. And I asked you to look at the dividends and the earnings per share. Earnings per share are the all-important statistic that we watch in every company. And they allow us to look at our stock as if it were a little engine, a little factory making money. Let's say the company made profit of $1 million. Is that a lot of money? Well, to you. But we don't know how many shares are outstanding. So if there are 500,000 shares outstanding, it's a very simple calculation, and we don't have to do it. Just look it up. You take the $1 million of earnings divided by the 500,000 shares, and that 500,000 shares, I'm sorry, and that gives us $2 of earnings per share. They might decide, let's pay out a dollar. Let's pay out 50%. That's called the dividend payout ratio. The company is paying out 50% of their earnings to the shareholders in the form of dividends. And then the last calculation we'll do on the worksheet number one, is the dividend yield. We take that dollar's worth of earnings and we divide it into or by the price. How much do we have to pay to get that dollar's worth of earnings? So if the stock were selling for a dollar, the stock were selling for $20 and we got a dollar dividend, that would be 5%. This allows us to take our stock and compare it next to a bond or a savings account or some other investment that's paying a certain rate. And we said, and we'll repeat it, 3-6% was normal, but now 2% is pretty good. 2-3%, some are paying more. And of course they went up in 2008 and 2009 when the price went down. Because you can raise the numerator or lower the denominator to make it bigger. And now they're down to about 2%. Okay, so now it's time to go to now take out your packet. Take out your packet and let's take a look at stock worksheet number 2. Remember, all of these are on the website. There are commentaries and, I did this a little backwards. Let's do 16, 17. We'll come back to the rest of them. Let's do 16, 17, and 18. So have you ever heard of Widgets Incorporated? What are widgets? You know, nothing. They're nothing. There's just a euphemism for something that this company creates. Widgets, little things, little chuchkas. They're currently selling for $52. So the market price is $52. Whoops, dollar sign goes before that. Many young folks are putting the dollar sign afterwards, which I guess makes sense. $52, but it's $1.52. Okay, their earnings per share last year was $3.75. So again, we just looked that up, and they're paying a dividend of $1.85. So they're paying dividends of $1.85 every year. So we're going to calculate the P-E ratio the price to earnings, and we discussed this, we'll discuss it in detail this week, next week. Price divided by earnings. Okay, so who wants to tackle this one? Tough question, folks. What's the price? Everyone should say. Because then I know you're still awake, right? What's the price? $52 divided by the earnings? $375. So what is the P.E. ratio? 13.87? Okay. Now, we don't use the dollar sign, no percent sign. P.E. is unitless. If you do, I'm not going to whack you. I'll just put a little sign. Don't use the dollar sign. Because the dollar sign is basically canceled. And what this is saying is that investors are expecting this stock to sort of do okay. Nothing exciting. Once it gets up to the 20 range, 30, 40, we saw, right? We saw some companies, yeah, much higher. Okay, now, what about the dividend payout ratio? The dividend payout ratio says, okay, how much am I paying out in relation to my earnings? So we take the dividends and divide them by the earnings. And you don't know, you'll see the P.E. ratio on every website you look. But you don't usually see the dividend payout ratio, but you can calculate it. It's pretty easy. Okay, so what's the dividends again? Everyone should say $1.85. Wait till I ask you. What's the dividend? $1.85 divided by the earnings. Everyone should say $3.75. What's the earnings? Okay, and what are they paying out? Yeah, about half, right? So what is it? 0.49, whatever. So it's about 50%. So they're taking a fairly cautious approach. Look, you know, we made this much money. We need some of it in retained earnings. You accounting fans remember retained earnings? What they don't pay out in dividends becomes part of the company's capital structure. Retained earnings. And they're saying, yeah, you know, we're going to reward you shareholders with 50% of our earnings. Now, if it were a company that were growing really fast, would they be able to pay out this? Why not? Think about it. They need that money to grow the company, right? So they're going to say, no, sorry, you know, we're a growth company. But then what should we see in the P.E.? We should see a higher P.E., and that's normally what you'll see. And then 18, the dividend yield, is actually a very simple calculation, but again, most websites are going to have it. You take the dividends and divide it by the market price. So what are the dividends? $1.85. What's the market price? Everyone's $1.90. So what's what is it paying out? 0.03557. We'd like to see at least three digits of accuracy, so 3.56%. Of course, if you just write down what's on your calculator, that's fine. But if you want to turn it into a percentage, move the decimal point 2 to the right, and then show at least three digits. You wouldn't want to show, first of all, around the 4%. You would not want to show 4% because that means anywhere between 3.5% and 4.5%. You want to show maybe 2, but let's show 3. Same when we get the bond yields. You want to show about 3 digits of accuracy. So is this that hard? Okay, Oliver here? Yeah. And Efren, Gavin? No. And Gabriel? No. Okay. I have to get these things back to you. Okay, piece of cake? Is that pretty straightforward? I think so. And again, we're going to look it up. We're going to just look it up. All right, now, what happened? There are several dates involved. And to some people, they're very, very important. Other people who are just buying and holding and collecting dividends, they don't care. But there's a day when the board of directors declares the dividend. They say, look, we're going to pay a dividend. But they want to give people time to react. So there's a date of record, and it's usually a few weeks, maybe a month ahead of when they declare the date. This is the date you must be a registered owner of our stock to receive the dividend. So if you own the stock on this day, you get the dividend. Cool? But there's a day, three business days before, where you have to buy the stock. And that's called ex-dividend date. But you told me, as long as I was a shareholder on this day, wait a minute, we'll see why. And then there's a day several weeks later where you actually get the money in your pocket, where they send you the check, but they don't send you a check anymore. It's all electronic. So why is the ex-dividend date 3 days before the date of record? Well, I think we might have made the mention about this, but when you buy a share of stock or shares of stock on you, either with your or through your broker, you don't actually own them on that day. Stock transactions clear in 3 days. Mutual fund transactions, by the way, clear in 1 day. You buy the mutual fund the 1 day, the next day you own it. You buy the stock today. What's today? It's Tuesday, right? Boom, boom, boom. Friday you'll own it. It used to be 5 business days. It used to take a week. But now it takes 3 days. So if you purchase the stock on June 15th, you don't actually own it until June 18th. So you have to buy the shares by the ex-dividend date for you to own the shares on the day that you are the registered owner. So it's a bit of confusion, but you need to know it. And so theoretically, because they're taking, in this case, you know, $1.85 out of the company, the price should drop commensurate. Like that word, commensurate? Not commiserate. That's different. Commensurate with the amount of the dividend, right? If we see a dollar a share dividend, we should see the price drop by a buck. But that doesn't really work that way because prices are changing all the time. So what you'll hear maybe from some people is don't buy the dividend. You'll hear people say, don't buy the dividend. You're better off waiting until the ex-dividend date before buying the stock. I, for people who are into this very, very short term, maybe it makes sense, but I think it's bogus. The logic follows thusly. Dividends are taxable transactions. If you buy the dividend, in other words, buy the stock just before the ex-dividend date, you got to pay the tax because it's a taxable transaction. Plus, the stock's going to fall commensurate along with the amount of the dividend. So you're better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so you'll get the stock at a better price and not generate a taxable transaction. I mean, I guess if you are the kind of person who buys and sells, then yeah, this is important. But if you're going to hold the stock for 3, 4, 5 years or longer, if it's a winner, I think it's bogus. Okay? All right, now, there are three types of dividends that we have to worry about here. Cash dividends. Well, actually two. The third one really is basically the same dividend. And stock dividends is basically this one. If you don't remember this, fine. What you should remember more than anything else is that this is what you want. You want a cash dividend. A cash dividend means, hey, we paid you cash, and now the IRS is going to come after you for the taxes. Fine. But stock dividends, they don't pay you in cash. What do? They give you more shares. Well, wait a minute. That sounds like a stock split, right? Exactly. It's exactly the same idea. They just issue more shares, so all other things being equal, and they never are, stock dividends have no value because they constitute a dilution of stock ownership. So they say, hey, we're going to give you a 10% stock dividend. Whoa, 10%. The other people are paying 2%. So you had 10 shares, now you have 11 shares. Yippee! What happened to the price of the stock? It went down 10%. So did they really give you anything? Isn't it nice the IRS doesn't tax you on them? You're not getting anything, and the IRS says, okay, we won't tax you. Thank you, IRS. So, I think it's bogus, but that's me. Other people might say, I'll get more shares. Great. But the same people got excited about the stock dividend. I mean, the stock split. Now, this is something that really is a cash dividend, but it's very cool and has a great name called DRIP. A dividend reinvestment plan. This is basically what goes on with your mutual funds. When the company pays you dividends, they say, look, we can pay you in cash if you want the cash. But what we'll do is we'll go out to the marketplace. Now, they don't do it. Somebody does it for them. They have a company that does it for them. They will go out and buy some of their own shares and give you the shares. You understand? So it's not a stock dilution. These are shares that are outstanding. They're not issuing any more stock. But you're getting shares as opposed to cash. The IRS, you still get taxed on it. The IRS is going to say, you know, you got something of value, pay us taxes on it. And these are very cool, especially for big companies that have been around for decades, dividend-rich companies. So here's an example. Here's an example of a drip. I also love the name. Isn't it great? Do you want a drip? Yeah, I do. Let's go down. Sorry. Where's the dividend reinvestment plan? Come on, Payana, where did it go? Do you see it? Here it is. This is when I was in a partnership. That's the legal term. But they're typically called investment clubs. Not to be confused with our investment club, which really isn't not an investment club in the sense. It's just a club of students. But we called ourselves the Cockatoo Grove Investment Partnership. This is Southwestern, people who worked here. And most of them are all retired. Do you know where Cockatoo Grove is? You're sitting on it. Before Southwestern was Southwestern, it was called Cockatoo Grove. And if you look at some maps, especially internet maps, they still say Cockatoo Grove, but nobody knows it. It's called Cockatoo Grove. But here, we purchased SDG&E. And SDG&E said, hey, cool, you want to invest in us? Go to this company, Equiserve. They handle our dividend reinvestment plan. And so we paid this company the money for the shares. They gave us the shares. And now when they will, this is a long time ago, when they would pay us the shares, they would note the dollar amount. Notice it's rising because the number of shares are rising. And this is the price of the stock as it bounces up and down. And so we started with 36.099 shares, just like a mutual fund, three digits of accuracy. And we got 0.368 shares. And 0.348 shares because the price went up. So even though the dollar amount went up, the prices went down. And so we're accumulating shares. But still, at the end of the year, we got to pay taxes on this. This is 2003. We have to pay taxes on that amount right there. We have to report that as income. Make sense? And this makes companies like Johnson & Johnson, ExxonMobil, Merck, Pfizer, dividend paying companies that ain't going anywhere, makes them like a mutual fund. They start to pay you dividends in the form of shares, and it's cool. I think it's cool. What's the downside? You're going to get 15 of these, or 10 or whatever. And there are some companies, like for $10 a month or something like that, that will aggregate them all for you. And most brokerage accounts now, most brokerage firms will allow you to do dividend reinvestment plans. But the really cool part is this cost. Look at the fee. Zero. Every three or four times, it'd be 9 cents or 12 cents or something like that. In other words, they were charging us almost nothing to do this for us, which is, you know, that's pretty cool. And even $10 a month is not bad. So, you like dividend reinvestment plans? Now, is a company like Apple, well, maybe Apple has it by now, but is Tinder or Forestbook, are these companies going to have dividend reinvestment plans? No, they don't pay dividends, right? And they haven't been around long enough. But once a company like McDonald's or Coke has been around forever, they get involved. And again, if you go to and this is part of your assignment, go to the Coca-Cola's website, look up investor relations or whatever it is. There'll often be hey, this is our company that handles our dividend reinvestment plan. Check them out. Okay, cool. Okay, we already took a look at price-to-earnings ratio, and let's review it because it's the most watched market statistic. Very simple. You take the price and divide it by the earnings. And 20 means that, people are kind of excited. Prices go down, the PEs, go down. Because the prices went down, the earnings go up, the PEs go down. Because it's a quotient. So, questions on P-E ratios? Piece of cake? Okay. We'll spend more time on price-earnings ratio. Again, just remember, it's much more subtle than this, but remember, if it's a high P-E, people are excited about the prospects of the company, but there's more risk. If it's a low P.E., people are not so excited, but ostensibly, meaning sort of, maybe, possibly, it's a lower risk than a high P.E. stock. All right, so stretch now. I'm sorry if I'm going through this quickly. I'm trying to get through chapter 5 today. Are you getting an education? Oh, good. Good. Are you talking to anybody about stocks? Yeah, talking to some people about stocks, and they say, I don't trust those bums. Good reason.
Pretty much a conversation I had with my father.
He doesn't trust.
He's like, no, don't do it. Put your money in savings. Yeah, he's not really a
Did you show him the? Oh, by the way, the new ICA guides have come out. So if you want one of the old ones, the 2008s, I can give them to you now. Yeah, show them the ICA stocks, bonds, cash. Okay. All right. So now, speaking of which, Joshua, when people just say, those stocks are all the same, that's wrong. That is so wrong. Companies, every company is different. Now, we group companies into various categories, realizing that some of them don't actually fit into those categories very well, and some fit in more than one. So you might have heard the term blue chip. Have you heard the term blue chip? Blue chip stocks. These are the biggest of the big companies, sometimes called the bluest of the blue. Financially strong, high quality stocks, long histories of stable records of earnings and dividends. And here's where we get into a little messiness in the language. Some people refer to these as value stocks. Be careful. They attract conservative investors. Now, these are people who still want to invest in stocks, right? They know, or hopefully they know, that they go up and down. And it has nothing to do with politics, folks. When we say conservative, these are people who are worried about losing the money. They still want to invest in stocks, but they want stocks that are going to be much less volatile than the snaps and the titters in the world. So General Electric, General Motors, oh, geez. Are these blue chip stocks anymore? Oh, General Electric is in serious trouble. General Motors is sort of coming out of it. It seems like they're coming out of it. And they're one of the few S&P 500 companies, Dow Jones companies, that are run by a woman. So check her out, Mary Barra. She's pretty sharp. She's pretty sharp. She seems to be navigating. But geez, going to probably break itself up. We don't know how. Who are the blue chips today? Who are the blue chips? Stage companies. Been around for a long time. Coca-Cola. Microsoft. Yeah, well, now Microsoft, right? Microsoft didn't used to be a blue chip, but now Microsoft is a blue chip. But Home Depot, Walmart, Johnson & Johnson, ExxonMobil, Chevron, these are the bluest of the blue companies. Okay, the next category are income stocks. And some blue chip stocks are income stocks. And again, sometimes you'll hear people use the term value. But when we talk about income stocks, we're normally talking about companies that are not really growing. We're talking about companies that are, maybe there's growth, but it's slow, in mature industries. And so who is the poster child? Utilities. Utilities, when we talk about income stocks, we often push in right in the front the utility company. Are they going anywhere? No. Are people all of a sudden deciding they're going to take cold showers in the dark and eating raw food? No. But are they growing? In some areas, yeah, areas that are growing. You know, 50 years ago, SDG&E was a growth stock because San Diego was exploding. But now San Diego, some areas are getting bigger. What we're going to do is infill now. So no, it's not a growth stock. Another industry that for decades was considered income until it got
exciting, and it almost destroyed our economy, and that's the banks. Banks are supposed to be boring, folks. That's the way they were set up after the Great Depression in 1930 when they said, okay, no more of this stuffy stuff. You're boring. You just handle people's money, and you invest it wisely. You find people who can pay their debts back. And then in the 1980s, and then in the 1990s, and the 2000s, banks got really exciting, and we almost destroyed the economy. Now there's a tug of war whether banks should be boring or whether banks should be exciting. I'm in the category where they should be boring. Yes.
And I know that the cap refers to the company's like earnings, but like usual stock companies, most of those qualify as like high cap stocks as they
were. We're going to get to capitalization in just a bit. We sort of danced around it. We're going to do some calculations. Hang on, we'll come back to that question. Yes, the answer is yes. Short answer is yes. But let's wait until we actually do some calculations on capitalization. Okay, the next category, these are the stars. These are the companies with the pecs, you know. They're on the cover of Vanity Unfair and GQ. They have the beautiful teeth and hair. These are companies that are experiencing high rates of growth. 15 to 20%. 20% doesn't sound like much, but if you were growing at 20% in 3 years, you'd be twice your size. Often associated with high PE ratios. Why? Because investors are excited. Often no dividends. Why? Because they're paying back, they're investing back in the company. Most of the profits, I just said, are reinvested in the company. The price should go up, but what do we know about growth stocks? What do we know about growth stocks? Everyone should say they will be volatile. What do we know about growth stocks? Look at the graph of Netflix. In the last 10 years, it's gone down 50%. What, four times? Three or four times? Oh, dear, remember the $100,000 in our... Now 50. Now it's back up to 100. Now it's 50 again. But do you guys all use Netflix? Do you? No, he says, no, I don't. I don't have a television. It doesn't matter. Okay. Read books, folks. The pictures are better in your mind. Really, I'm serious. Okay, so let's take an example. Intel, Microsoft, wait a minute. Are Intel, Microsoft, and HP still growth stocks? No. No, these are companies that saw their growth, their exponential growth, their huge growth, back in the 80s and 90s. And now they're growing slowly. They've become blue chip companies. Now HP, I don't know, they're having a little bit of a tough time. But Intel and Microsoft ain't going anywhere. Intel, you know, everybody keeps saying, Intel's washed up. Oh, but they just, now everybody uses their chips. In the before, remember the, I can never remember the name of that company, ARM. Advanced something or other. They're based actually in the UK, but of course it's a global company. And they were kicking Intel's butt in the mobile device. Now Intel's kicking their butt in the mobile devices. But who else is doing really well in the mobile devices? Qualcomm, right? Qualcomm. So who are the growth stocks today? Who are the companies with the beautiful teeth and the gorgeous hair? Tesla. Oh, yeah, Tesla. Oh, boy, let's hope for the best for them. Ooh. Who else? Come on, you hear about them all every day, right? Amazon, Netflix, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter.
Wait, why is
Apple considered a growth stock? I know, it's a very good point because Apple is sort of an unloved stock. Let's take a look at it. Let's take a quick look. Okay, get rid of you. I got too many open. You ever notice that? I don't want that one. Where's our...
They're like on the high end of
the
mid cap, right?
Oh, no, it's huge. It's a large cap company. But where do you see? Let's take a... Come on, Internet. Okay. So let's take a look at Forcebook. What's their PE? Oh, my goodness. Their PE is down to 22. But look at their market capitalization. $491 billion. So let's take a look at Amazon. PE 83, right? Netflix. PE 132, right? Why do you see Apple's PE? I think it's like 13, or it was 13. 50, it's gone up to 15. So Apple's really an unloved stock, but they are growing. In fact, where's their biggest growth right now? In their web services. But they're still far behind Amazon. But their web services are doing really well. Microsoft's are doing really well. You would think Oracle. Oracle's kind of getting clobbered. Oracle, you don't know who Oracle is. Take a look at who they are. They're a pretty cool company. Every time you swipe a card, a Visa, MasterCard, squeeze you, you're probably using Oracle databases, Oracle software. And they said, I mean, the guy who runs Oracle believes he's God. Actually, he knows he's God. Larry Ellison. He said a few years ago, we will be the big cloud-based provider. He was wrong. But he's not, you know, they're still fighting. They're still fighting it out. So is Apple really a growth company? Yeah, it's still a growth company, but it's not as loved as many other companies. I think people are really frightened about China. They should be. Hopefully we'll get through this. Okay, now, here's where we're dancing around. Remember I put quotes around value? I put quotes around there. There's a reason for this. Because it depends on who you're talking with. It depends on what investments you're looking at, what mutual funds, for example. The investment world loves to throw around these terms growth and value. But the meanings of the terms are not exact. It depends on who you're talking about. Typically, but not always, it depends on the investor. If you talk to me, no. But if you talk to many other people, yes. Investors often use growth to designate a high PE stock. And they use value to designate a low PE stock. Are you with me? Okay, it's a low PE. It means it's not as risky. Right? Well, not necessarily. A high PE stock may be a great value. A low PE stock may be a horrible value. See, I use the term value when I think of something that's worth something. It's my best interest to buy this or to invest in that. Because there's value there. It might have a high PE. It might have a low PE. So here's a tremendous example. January 2005, Google had gone public in August of 2004, went from $85 to $200. It was selling for around $200 with a PE, I think it was 67. I wish I would have wrote it down. It's pretty high, 60, 70. The old GM, which is gone, that company's gone, was selling for $34 with a very low PE, like 6, and huge dividends. They were paying huge dividends. And they weren't doing that great. They couldn't make any money selling cars. The only thing they were making money off of were bummers. Hummers. Hummers. They were making money off of Hummers and Uh-ohs. You know Chevy Uh-ohs? Tahoes. Chevy Tahoes. They were making money off of these SUVs. They were losing money on every single car they made. And they're still paying out huge dividends. And I kept saying, short GM. No, I didn't do it. I should have. I kept saying, GM's not going to be around. The next recession, they're going to disappear. And I was right. I didn't act on it. Today, right, Google sells for around $1,200, $2,100. That's split adjusted, right, with a much lower PE. The old GM stock, which they renamed Motors Liquidation. First, they named it Liquidation Motors. GM was kind of upset with that. You know, General Motors, Liquidation Motors, because they were liquidating it. They changed the name to Motors Liquidation. It last sold for 4 cents in March of 2011. And if you have shares now, they are worthless. So which was the better value? Google is the better value, right? So you have to be careful. Don't fall into the trap of saying, just because it's a low PE stock, that means it's a good value. No. They call them value stocks. They might be good values. They might not be good values. Just because a company has high growth rate, it may be a good value. You see everybody around you playing Facebook games? I don't. I don't look. But I have a Facebook account, by the way. Believe it or not. I wanted to claim Wonder Professor so nobody else would grab it and cause confusion with the students. So I created this Wonder Professor dot whatever it is, Facebook/Wonder Professor. And I got 59 friend requests, mostly from people I don't even know who the hell they are. And I say on my Facebook page, I do not use Facebook. Here's how to get in touch with me. Contact me through Southwestern, my wonderful professor. My ex-girlfriend tried to ask me to become a friend. I called her up and said, sorry, we still talk. I don't do Facebook. Okay, so now, did you get that? Did you get that? You understand that, folks? Be careful. It's subtle. Next group. Speculative stocks. Sometimes lumped in with growth stocks. Sometimes I just call them speculative. They're speculative. These are companies with a very high degree of risk. They're typically losing money, or maybe they have very, very low earnings. But they offer the possibility of substantial financial gains, and more likely substantial capital losses. So, what are examples? Biotech, internet company, alternative fuels, marijuana now. Anyone want to buy some Tesla stock? Folks, it's either going to be the most spectacular company the world has ever seen, or it's going to disappear. You know, and I think the cars are the most beautiful cars ever made, but who knows what's going to happen. Let's take a look at GoPro. You ever heard of GoPro? They still have them, right? They're still around, yeah. And I had a student who was really high on this. And I kept saying, you know, they're cool products. Obviously, you know, you can jump out of an airplane and land in the water and the darn thing will still video you. But how come Canon and Nikon and Apple and Samsung, how come they're not building these things, right? Obviously, they must think the market's not that big for them. And sure enough, everybody who bought a GoPro bought one, and then the company quickly just, the earnings just disappeared. So this is, you know, look at that. This is the meteoric growth. And what do you hear people say? Ooh, is it too late to get in? And then bingo, it dropped in more than half and then sort of came back. They call this the dead cat bounce. And then boom, and now it's down. It's been steady, though, for several years. But notice, are they making any money? No.
No earnings.
Negative earnings. So be careful, you know, be careful because these things come along every once in a while. These speculative stocks, they're always around. And you get really excited. The biotech companies were the ones that made me really sad in the late 1990s because some of these companies are so awesome. They're just the technologies they're doing. They're going to change the world. And most of them are going to go broke and disappear. And you're never going to hear from them again. Yes. No, it's just because of the technology. And it's also because everybody rushes in. All these companies rush in. You know, in the 1840s, there were 400 railroad firms. How many railroad firms are there now? What? And less than a handful, like three. There's a few that are owned by others. And in the 1910s, 1920s, there were dozens and dozens of car companies. How many are there now? In the 1990s, there were all these internet companies and biotech companies that were really exciting. And where are they now? They're gone. Remember pets.com? The sock? You don't remember. Some of you weren't born yet. You know, some of you weren't even born yet, but it was the stock. It was very popular, the stock. And then e-toys, you know, they're gone. So it comes back to what Mr. Benjamin Graham said, and again, it's another example, another opportunity for me to sneak this in. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. Are you an investor or are you a speculator? Now, there are a series of companies that are called cyclical, and not because the companies are round. It's because these companies follow the up and downs of the economy. When the economy is doing really, really well, they do well. When the economy is not doing very well, they don't do very well. And the poster child for this group are automobiles. And that culture is going to change over time, hopefully sooner than later, when you no longer have to own a car to live in our society. But what happens when the economy is doing strong? You get a new job, you get a raise. What do people do?
They go and buy a new car. How's the old car? No, it's fine, but I want a new car. I like that new car smell. What happens when people are losing their jobs? There's a recession. Do you go out and buy a new car? Probably the best time to go out and buy it because sales are soft. But no, people hold back. And at the Great Recession, at 2011, the age of the vehicles on the road in the United States was the oldest it had ever been. It was over 11 years old, the average age of cars, because people just stopped buying cars. They just said, I can't buy a new car now. But also, any company that makes stuff, timber, chemicals, steel, and now computer chips, right? It's everything we buy has a chip in it. So any company that makes stuff, transportation companies, because they got to get the stuff to where it needs to go to build it and then get the stuff to where it needs to go to sell it. The other side of that coin are defensive stocks, not defense companies, not companies that make bullets, but defensive stocks. And these are stocks that tend to hold their own, and sometimes they even do better than the rest of the world. They actually tend to go up when the economy starts to falter. And who are these companies? Food, drug companies. Do you eat more Cheerios because the economy is doing really well? Do you eat fewer Cheerios? You eat food, right? Do you take more insulin because the economy is doing well? Do you take less insulin? You with me, right? So these companies, they aren't exciting. They're the oatmeal. Remember equity income? They tend to do well when the economy falters. Often because people cycle out of the growth in the cyclical into the defensive to get them through the recession. So you'll see these drug companies, food companies. Who else? Those are the biggies. Turnarounds. I like to call them goners. Turnaround stocks. These are companies that have hit on hard times. And you have to ask yourself, as a more speculative, a more aggressive, a more chancy investor, is there a potential for the rebound? In the early 80s, Chrysler almost disappeared. And no, most of you weren't alive. But their cars were so bad, before they got off the lot, parts were falling off. And then this one gentleman by the name of Lee Iacocca. Iacocca? I can't spell his name, but check him out. That's it, Iacocca. He brought them back from the brink, and so he's probably in his 90s by now. But he's the guy who was the project leader. He developed the Mustang at Ford, so he's a pretty sharp guy. And Ford and GM are coming back. Chrysler seems to be coming back. Chrysler's gotten together with Fiat. You know where Fiat's from, right? I'm Italian, you know, I love my country land, but you know what Fiat stands for, don't you? Fix it again, Tony! So we'll see, you know. Who else, you retail folks, who's on the ropes now? JCPenney's, Macy's, who else? Dillard's. I don't know anything about Dillard's. Where are they? Are they here still? They're back east, right? Midwest. Dillard's. Didn't they used to be owned by Target? No. Target used to own Mervyn's. And they sold them off and they disappeared. Yeah.
Sears.
Oh, yeah. Sears, Kmart. Oh, boy. And then penny stocks. Folks, whatever inkling you have to try to get involved with these companies, just destroy it. Okay? Just squash it. Don't get involved in penny stocks. They are scams. Now, there's a few companies that are trying to make it, and they're almost dead. They're trying to bring themselves back to life. But most of them are just BS. And at the end, maybe in between, have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
I have a little clip from that discussed that we can look at where he shows you, oh, my God, look at these spreads. The problem is you think you can beat these people at their own game. Wrong, you can't. If you're at the poker table and you don't know who the patsy is, who's the patsy?
You.
Right? So you're playing their game. You're already at a disadvantage. So just stay away from these things. And I got some examples. I'm my apologies. I normally would show you some.
But I'm not going to show them to you now because we're just trying to get through this. If I'm going too fast, just say so. But just, they're not real companies. You've heard of Butterfly.com, right? No, you didn't hear about them? Yeah. And they make the bacon stretcher, right? They make the bacon stretcher, right? It's not doing so well, but so they're going to come out with a new product. It's called Blue Steam. Blue Steam, and everybody's going to want it, right? Not like the Pink Steam last year. No, now they're in the marijuana, right? Now they're in the marijuana. Just stay away from these. They're not real companies. And then, finally, foreign stocks. And on the assignment, there's at least one foreign stock. It's actually a very interesting company. Unilever, you'll see it. But sometimes called international, foreign. Traditionally, it was difficult, but now not anymore. Most brokerage firms have these international brokerage accounts, and you can move your dollars into yen and then buy Nintendo. You can move your dollars into euros and buy Adidas. Move your dollars into pesos and buy Cementos de Mexico. But typically, we would wait until a company such as Toyota or Sony or Unilever were issued in the United States under what are called ADRs, American Depository Receipts. Sometimes you'll just see DR for Depository Receipts, and sometimes you'll see GDR for Global Depository Receipts. What did they do? They took a ton of Sony stock in Japan, moved it over to New York, and then reissued it in dollar form. And so you can buy into Toyota, you can buy into Sony, you can buy into Unilever. Not Michelin, you have to go on the French exchange. So those, I think, are a better deal. Sometimes what they'll do is some of these people, you know, I don't trust these people, they're the same people who are selling penny stocks. They'll take some shares and bring them here and denominate them in dollars, but they'll sell them on the pink sheets or on the bulletin boards or the OTC. And some of the online students were finding these companies. And I said, no, stay away, don't do it. Maybe you'll get a good deal. I don't think you will. For most of us, how are we going to invest outside the United States?
Mutual funds.
The vast majority of us, that's how I do it. Although, the company I work for, actually, this is their bread and butter. And most all the brokers are Mexican. One guy's from Spain. And most of their clients, not me, some, but most of the clients are in from Mexico. And so they have these international brokerage accounts, and that's our bread and butter. In fact, on my little card has a picture of the symbol from the United States currency and from the Mexican currency. Cute. Okay? So, now, what's the issue? The issue with these guys is the currency. And those of you who go down to Mexico often, you know the effects of currency changes. A little over 10 years ago, the dollar was selling at 10 pesos. Now it's almost 20. So what does that do? That makes our dollar worth a hell of a lot more. I mean, the dollar is worth much more. So any assets you owned in Mexico, the dollar goes up, the assets go down. Because now if you sold that asset, you're going to get fewer dollars per pesos. The exact same opposite happens if the dollar goes down. Any investments you have abroad are going to be worth more. So all the things being equal, and they never are, our currency rises, our foreign investments go down, currency goes down, our international, our foreign investments go up. But over the long term, I tell you the truth, folks, I think the dollar is way too strong. Personally, it doesn't mean I'm right, right? And the weaker dollar, I think, is in our future. But we'll see. I'll never forget, this was a couple years ago, it touched 20, 21 pesos. We went down to La Paz, my wife and I, and we felt like we were stealing the food out of the people's mouths. We got $4.50 for a huge dinner that we shared. I gave her a 100 peso tip, and it was like 85 pesos, like $4. I gave her a 100 peso tip, and she said, Señor, I said, que le vaya bien. Okay. So now, finally, Joshua, let's get back to capitalization. Oh, quick. So let's get back to let's take a look at our, where did it go? Do I know what I'm doing? Where did it go?
Where did,
aired it.
No, it isn't. Where did I go? What did I do with it? I'll get it again. Okay.
There it is. Okay. So now let's take a look at 7 through 15 on worksheet number 2. And how would you categorize these companies? Realizing that, you know, some of them fit in more than one, some of them don't fit in any. Where would you put 4? Well, for decades, it's been blue chip, right? What is it now? Well, I don't think it's a goner, but it's definitely a turnaround. Have they turned themselves around? It sure looked like it a couple years ago. It looked like they were going to, they're moving into Asia. I was one of the ones who believed. I didn't buy the stock. I was going to, but I didn't. I thought that the Chinese were going to fall in love with the F-150 pickup truck. Because you know what the biggest selling car in the United States is. It's not a car. It's the F-150 pickup truck. Yeah. So we'll see. But car companies are cyclical. They're the poster child for a cyclical company. How about Walmart?
Blue chip.
Oh, yeah. Big blue chip company. Huge capitalization. What else can we say about them? It's a retailer. Retailers tend to be cyclical because as more stuff is bought, they do. But what can we say about Walmart? It's actually, they're a little more defensive. As retailers go, they're more defensive because when things go bad, people said, I'm going to shop at, you know, needless markup anymore. I'm going to go to Target and Walmart. So they're kind of counter-cyclical when it comes to retailers. How about $5? I'm sorry. $4.
Tough one.
It is a tough one, isn't it?
They haven't been around long, but I said probably blue chip.
Yeah.
They're high cap, so I'm going to say Avon, but they're kind of cyclical because when the economy's down, you can't really afford, you know, $8 latte. So
it's very unusual though, but people do. It's a drug. Yeah, they're caffeine. They go, oh, I got to take this stuff. I don't care how much it costs. For a long time, they were growth. They were growing like crazy. I mean, they put on top of one another, and they said, we're going to have 40,000. And then they decided, you know what? They closed about 600 of them. But they're a very strange group. They're not growing anymore. They're not. But they're trying to find other venues to sell their stuff, so... I wouldn't call them an adult. Do we do asset play? We didn't even do asset play, did we? Oh, sorry. Asset play. We'll get back to asset play. I apologize. We'll get back to asset play. No, I don't know where to put Starbucks. I don't know where to put them. I guess a drug company, maybe defensive. How about Sears, Kmart? Goner. Okay. General Mills? What do they make?
Defensive.
Cheerios, right? Wheaties. Defensive. They make all kinds of food stuff. And they're a blue chip. They've been around for over 100 some odd years. How about Union Pacific Railroad? What are railroads? Well, they're a blue chip, certainly. They've been around for 180 years, 170 years or so.
Income?
Yes, railroads tend to pay decent, not excitingly so, but yeah, they tend to pay a good income. And what happens when the economy ramps up? They're cyclical because they're transportation. Plus, railroads have been sitting on an asset that they were given 180 years ago, 170 years ago by the government, and they still own real estate. They're sitting on some of the most expensive real estate in the world. Remember they wanted to build this downtown stadium for the Dischargers?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was, I forget, I don't think Union Pacific owns it, I think Burlington owns it. But that downtown area where the railroad is, that was where they were going to build the stadium. What about Michelin? Yeah, they're foreign, but they're global company. Alcoa, what do they make? Aluminum Corporation of America. That's what they used to be called, Alcoa. Aluminum Corporation of America. They make aluminum. They make products. They make materials. But they make planes out of it. So what are companies that make materials?
Cyclical
companies. And El Paso Electric? It's a utility. So, I'm sorry? Foreign? No. El Paso is still in, it's all right on across the border. In Nogales. Okay, no, not Nogales. Ciudad Juarez. What's the company? I forget, it's not important. El Paso Electric. It's a utility income plus utilities are often sitting on tons of land. So they tend to be asset plays. They tend to be asset plays too. Okay, piece of cake. Realize, I said, that's just part of your assignment. On your assignment, I'm going to ask you to look up the stuff that you look up in Yahoo or MarketWatch or whatever, or go to the internet. And also, at the very last one, I'm going to ask you to put what you think the company is, what kind of company you think it is. And realizing that some companies don't fit in certain categories, where do you put Starbucks? And other companies fit in more than one. Okay, well done. All right, now, finally. How are we doing? Not bad. I told myself we've got to get to slide 84, and we will get to slide 84. Don't worry, it's just tuberculosis. That's not a good joke, is it? It's not a good joke. Don't joke about that. No, there's no vaccine. Every 4 years we have to do a skin test. That's right. Every 4 years, if you work at a school, every 4 years you have to have a skin test. And so I have so far. Okay, capitalization. This is the term that we've been dancing around all semester long. And there are basically three categories. The papa bear, the mama bear, and the baby bear. But we tend to call them large cap, mid cap, small cap. And these categories are changing, certainly. You're hearing people say no, unless it's $15 billion or up, it's not a large cap. But I still use the older categories. Anything that's greater than $10 billion of market capitalization, let's call large cap. Realizing that more and more people are saying, no, it has to be at least $15 billion. Mid cap tends to stay between $2 billion up to $10 billion. However, there are some people saying, oh, no, unless the company is at least $5 or $6 billion, it's not a... That's an or. Unless it's at least $5 or $6 billion, it's not a mid-cap stock. And then anything less than, say, $1 or $2 billion, I guess nobody uses $1 anymore. I shouldn't. Anything less than $2 billion, although some people are saying, no, up to $5 billion is a small-cap company. So those are the big three. You must know these. Now, there are subcategories. There are subcategories. Anything generally... greater than $100 billion is considered mega cap. It's still a large cap company. You can still call it large cap, but it's mega cap. And then anything less than, say, around $100 million is now in the area that we call micro cap. Although I've heard people say up to $200 million. So these are subcategories. This is a subcategory of small, this is a subcategory of large. And then penny stocks, again, just stay away. Often they're in the $100,000 range if they're that much. Just stay away from penny stocks. Cool? Okay, so here's the calculation, which you don't have to do, by the way. We'll do a couple. They're not that hard. But you take the price of the company, multiply it times the number of shares, and you get the market capitalization. So here's a small cap stock, right? $20 times 5 million shares is $100 million. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of money, right? $100 million to you and me, it is. But in the world of publicly traded companies, this is a micro company. This is a very tiny company. And remember, valuation is the key. The price is meaningless. So let's take a look at two mom-and-pop shops that you may have gone to, Walmart and Target. Have you heard of Walmart and Target? So you look at the price, $96, this is as of what? 11th of February, a month ago, and versus $70. So you'd be tempted to think, well, you know, Walmart's a little bigger than... No. What do you intuitively know? Who's the much bigger company? Walmart's much bigger because there's about 3 billion shares of Walmart outstanding, about 520 million shares of Target. So Walmart, almost $300 billion. Whereas Target's no slouch, don't get me wrong, $34.5 billion. It's still a large cap company, but it's tiny compared to Walmart. Target isn't even outside the United States. It's all based in the United States. Questions, thoughts, ideas? So, if you wanted to buy Walmart, you wanted to own the company, you'd walk on down to the New York Stock Exchange with $279 billion in your pocket and say, I want to buy Walmart. Now, does it work that way? What?
It's a big
pocket. Does it work that way? No. Because as soon as you started buying all the shares that were offered, what would happen to the price? The price would start going up. What the hell's going on? Everybody's buying the shares. I don't understand. Right? And so now what they have is a method for companies when an individual or a group of individuals or another company wants to buy one company. They go to the stock exchange and say, we have a tender offer. That's what they call it, a tender offer. We will, now no one's going to buy Walmart, but let's say somebody wanted to buy Target because Apple could. Apple's got enough cash. Apple said we want to buy Target for whatever reason. We will offer $80 a share. They usually offer at least 10, maybe 20% more to make it people worth their while, right? And so there's a set methodology for that information. And there's a time when they say, we have a tender offer now for Target offered from this entity or whatever for $70, $80 a share. What happens to the price? Bing! It'll jump very close or maybe more. If the investors, if the traders, mostly traders, if people believe that it's a bona fide offer. Bona fide means real. You know, they're not just blowing smoke. If people don't believe it, they'll just say, forget it, and the price will stay down. If somebody thinks or people think that somebody's going to offer more for this company, the price might go higher, and they might get into a bidding war. Are you with me? Understand? So what do you think about the possibility of somebody getting that information before it becomes public? You see what can happen? And they can do what's called insider trading. And it's very, very serious because they're basically stealing. And there's a whole, we'll discuss insider trading, material, non-public information. Okay, how about these two companies? We're going to take a look at them. AT&T and Verizon. Wait a minute. Is Verizon worth twice as much as AT&T? No, there's 7 billion shares of AT&T, 4 billion shares of Verizon. So the companies are fairly worth about the same much. Are they both large cap companies? Yeah, they're both mega cap companies. Millions of dollars. Billions of dollars. Okay. So, would you think these companies are worth their prices?
Yes.
Anybody going to give up their cell phone? No, I hope not. For your sake. I want to. When I find somebody that doesn't have a cell phone, I say, bless you. You are the luckiest person in the world. Okay, so I'll get it. Oh, you got it? Okay, thanks. Okay, so now take out worksheet number 3. Oh, I'm tired. I've been breathing all day. Okay. So, this is data from, what is this? This is from February 5th. This is a while ago. Okay. So you heard of Marriott International? Yeah, the hotel chain. Where would you put them? What type of stock do you think? Well, I don't know if McDonald's would, they didn't Marriott. But maybe blue chip. Yeah, they're big. They're not going anywhere. They're all around the world, right? If you work, one of the cool things about working for hotels, they'll send you anywhere around the world, and they'll train you. They'll teach you languages and stuff. That they're, you know, people who are into travel, it's a great place to work for if you're into that. I knew one guy who didn't have a house. He lived in the hotels. He was one of the executives, and he just had his stuff moved from one hotel to another, and he lived. That's where he lived. I mean, he worked and lived. That was his life. He didn't have a family, obviously. Given the following stocks in the stock. So where would you put a hotel? Cyclical, right. Hotels are typically cyclical. when business investment, when companies do well, people are getting more money in their pockets, they do more travel, and then when there's a downturn, they tend to not do as well. Okay, so where do you think Marriott would be traded? New York Stock Exchange, right? They've been around for decades. Well, they moved. And so how do we find this out? This is one of the things I ask you. They're on the NASDAQ now. So how do we find this out? We type in Marriott. And notice, the one of the first things they tell you, although most people don't see it, is what exchange they're on. They're on the NASDAQ. GS stands for Global Select. I don't care if you remember that. There's three tiers in the NASDAQ. So that's one of the first things they tell you. It's on the NASDAQ. But you really can't, you just can't know anymore. You have to check. Because for decades, they were on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, the recent stock price, we just looked at it, so let's just say this was a few months ago. $117.50 is the price. Here's where it gets tricky, because most of us have a dollar calculator. How many shares are outstanding? Tough question, folks. Everyone should say 341.13. And now, what I tell you to do, folks, is just leave the million. Don't try to put all the zeros in. Maybe you have an exponential calculator or a scientific calculator. So multiply 117.50 times 341.13. Almost done. We got to 84. That's good. That's what we needed to do. Sorry. $40,118.025, and then bring down the word million. Bring down the million, okay? Bring down the million. Now, if you just leave it that way, it's okay, but that's not what you're going to see. How are people going to show this? They're going to move the decimal point 3 to the left and print 40.1 billion. Either way is fine. Either way, I'm happy, I don't care. Just write down what your calculator says and then put down the word million. Because you're not going to see 40,000 million, you're going to see 40.1 billion. But is this a large cap, mid cap, small cap? Well, not quite mega cap. Mega cap is 100. So they're not in the mega cap world yet. I don't know if they ever will. Well, someday they will, obviously. Inflation goes up. But that's not going to be for decades. Okay, what about Ryder Trucks? Have you ever heard of them?
Ryder
Wrench Trucks. Yeah, that's their thing. Ryder Wrench Trucks. They're very lucky. They got the R, one of the one digit. So where do you think they would be? They've been around for decades. NASDAQ. They're on the New York Stock Exchange. They're on the New York Stock Exchange. But, again, look it up. So let's just do one more because we're out of time here. But we'll come back to these. $58.75 times how many shares? Tough question, folks. How many shares? 53.09 million. Okay, so what is that number? Let's try it again. Should be like 300 or something. 3,000 or something. 3,119.0375 million. Again, if you just left it this way, that's fine. But what are you going to see? 3.12 billion. So how what kind of stock is it? Is it large cap, mid cap, small cap? You could put small or mid, either one. Most people would say mid, but now small cap has gone up to 5 billion. Okay, we'll finish these two on Thursday. We'll finish up chapter 5, and we will start the heart of the course. Who snuck in?